Mellon? We definitely talked about it. The letter was so full of inaccuracies and advocated for something that is completely contrary to the protocol that governs this case. So we thought it would be unethical to give it to a judge. And don't worry, the judge got it. Mother handed it out all over. I also don't know why Paradigm didn't just send it directly to a judge, because then it would have been confidential and not circulated.
But it was addressed, though it was sent to you and it was addressed to the judge, correct?
Just to the presiding judge.
To the presiding judge. All right. And you did not forward it with looking back, would you have forwarded it now with a letter of concerns, or do you think it could be viewed that you didn't provide it to the judge because you felt it was it was right?
Well, Dr. Mellon wrote a report to the judge, and it describes the letter and says why it's erroneous and talks about how there's forensic thinking and then there's clinical. It was addressed to the judge. It just wasn't sent as an attachment. So we didn't ignore it.
Okay. All right. And can you explain there was issues that were raised regarding the gentleman that assisted you? His name is escaping me right now. Yeah, and that and him being part of the team guest sessions and doing the massages. I think in the last meeting you were saying it was a neck massage. We did see the father's comments that he didn't have a problem with that, but could you just address that, because it definitely was an issue that was raised by the complainant?
Well, I believe mother's concern was not that a massage was given, was that she didn't know my personal business, that I had a personal relationship with father, with Mr. Miller.
Was that personal relationship during that time?
Yes. And some of my other clients, I disclosed the personal relationship to. I said, you know, we're going to be working close together. If there's something you want to know about Mr. Miller and I, you know, we're going to be arriving in the same car because blah, 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 blah. But in this case, it would not be in the child's best interest.
Okay. In regards to the financial plan, father was paying it, but wasn't it as indicated that it was father's employer that was paying it?
Through a loan.
Excuse me?
I believe father's employer gave him a loan.
Oh, gave him a loan.
Not really.
All right. And then in a 6-month period, it's totals roughly $35,000.
Correct.
Does that sound about right? I mean, when looking at the invoices, it appeared that there were like almost every other day, a couple times a week. It was a lot of and the invoices were not detailed. They did have your coding numbers on it, but nothing, there was no verbiage about what it was. Can you just talk a little bit about your billing and why is that typical of a client to be seeing that much or that those costs involved?
So, I know it's unusual. I've actually moved away from this because it's too emotionally difficult, but I was more frequently providing very intensive services to high need clients. So this isn't the only family that would pay me, you know, it sounds shocking, $10,000 a month, but I was providing, I worked for it. The child saw me twice a week. For therapy, saw me twice for therapeutic supervision. So when you look at my coding and my records, if it is a service for which the parent may have insurance that could reimburse, I use a CPT code. If it is a professional service that would not be reimbursable, is more in the line of the forensic part of the service, then I call it professional services. So your question is basically, why did I make so much money?
No, I don't. I think there was a question about the complaint, the amount, and then I guess I'm trying to look at the billing was so often and frequent. So I was trying to, if that's typical of a client.
I've had, I think, two or three other cases where that's happened, but I only take one of those at a time. You're my high needs client. And then the rest of my practice is balanced out and more traditional. But it's a very demanding approach to providing services. And I provided an itemization to the board as part of my response that looked more closely at the professional services that were provided. And as I was doing that, I was like, I thought it was maybe an underestimate of what I provided.
All right. Thank you. Questions from the board members?
This is Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Dr. Seda. Sorry, Suda. Can you tell me, I'm struggling to see the differentiation between Dr. Mellon's role as the therapeutic interventionist versus your role as a psychotherapist. And there seems to be a lot of crossover. So can you explain to me specifically what your role was and was not, and was that, how well was that explained to the clients involved?
Doctor, I'm perfectly happy to have a client answer the question, but I want you to know Dr. Mellon will be testifying very shortly, so you can ask her the same question. So, go ahead.
So Dr. Mellon had, in clinical terms, she was the family therapist. And in forensic court-informed terms, she was the therapeutic interventionist. So as a family therapist, you don't play the dual role of conducting individual therapy with people who have significant needs. So Dr. Mellon ended up building a team, and I was the child therapist. When I began participating in the reunification process by going to like IKEA with father and the daughter, I was in a role called therapeutic supervision. So I was providing therapy services to the dyad. Does that answer your question?
Was all of that made clear to your patient as well as guardians? Because your consent form talks about psychotherapy. And the activities you engaged in with them seem to be much different than psychotherapy.
Right. Well, there's a component of psychotherapy, but what happens is Dr. Mellon's recommendations were legally binding on the clients. Of course, I wanted assent. They're them wanting my services, because otherwise I can't be effective. So you're right, I have never, like when I met the child, I never planned to do therapeutic supervision. Honestly, people usually hire somebody who is much less expensive to provide that service. In this case, the child refused, she's very strong will, to do anything without me. And that, and the mother also had that perspective, and the father was agreeable with me. So Dr. Mellon said, okay, if this is gonna go forward, I'm gonna go and meet the child where she is and let Dr. Sade go begin by going on these sessions. So yes, both parents were aware of it, and father was with me. And by the way, I have not had my consent, a provision about therapeutic supervision, but it's very rare that I provide it because most people wouldn't pay for it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, partially. So do you feel like at any time you crossed any professional boundaries in the activities you performed, the continued in increase in services, the just the overall amount of activities that you took on?
Absolutely not. I did what I wish more people did. And that was, I was really, really trying to keep this child out of a residential treatment center. And this is a rare case where the family could afford to have me do that. And she made progress with me, but it wasn't long-term either. This all occurred from April through end of July. I don't hang on to clients to try and make money off of them.
Okay. Thank you. My next question is about the letter from the Residential Treatment Center. And in that, it said that the patient experienced an increase in anxiety and depression and confusion because of her separation from her mother and a lack of being allowed to interact with her mother. That seems to me like that would suggest the separation test was not giving you the answers you would expect. If she got worse when she was away from mom?
Oh, good question. So we have to look at domains, okay? She physically got better. She reunited with father very easily. And she experienced significant emotional distress about being separated from mother. Her distress about mother cannot be used as a litmus test for whether it was needed. She, and this is what's so complicated, never tell her about the problem with the mother-child connection. That is, according to the guidelines, you never tell the child.
We're losing sound on you.
Yeah. Hey, Krista, could you make sure everybody's on mute except Dr. Sadea? I think we're getting some background somewhere.
So the, from the child's perspective, she can't be given a plausible story about why she can't see mom. And we have to say, you know, it's not our decision. The Department of Child Services has a protocol that says they cannot have contact. So we say, you know, there's people who are in charge of this, and they're saying, you know, we're just, and so that's very stressful. It wasn't the best, what was required. Honestly, that wasn't even up to me. I don't decide how DCS handles these investigations. I'm not Dr. Mellon either. I don't make those decisions.
Okay, thank you. Final question is with regards to the coaching by Mr. Miller, is that right? And massage therapy. I saw in the consent that it talked about coaching and skills. I did not see anything about massage therapy. Was that, did I miss that? Is that somewhere in your consent form?
It's not in the consent. It's in an email correspondence with the clients. And so the way I communicated with these parents is I wanted them to have the same information at the same time and then document their responses to the information I provided them. So I was going to do a skills group for kids, and Mr. Miller was going to run it with me. Both parents said, yeah, I want my child to participate. The group didn't run. And I said, sometimes there are cases where Mr. Miller joins sessions. I think it might be helpful to the child here because she's expressing a global fear of men. She wouldn't even let me write the word father on a whiteboard because it instilled too much terror in her. And so as part of desensitization, having been in the room for Mr. Miller was part of that. I think, you know, as part of, you know, explaining to her why he's there, talked about her fear, she expressed a lot of fear about being there. He was there, it was fine. He rubbed her shoulders no more than 10 minutes. Honestly, Mr. Miller,
I can't hear her. Krista, can you hear her? There's a lot of background noise here. Do you have any?
I have everybody on mute unless they unmute themselves, which there's only a couple individuals I show included. I think we're getting some sort of interference.
Doctor, did that answer your question?
I didn't hear quite what was said there at the very last about the client's response and assent or anything about therapy.
Yes. Dr. Ocean, can you mute your thing? I'm looking at all the people who are unmuted to help. And even the speakers, Tammy, maybe even you need to mute, you know, till it's time to talk. Okay, that helps.
In this particular case, the client was very excited about massage, you know.
Can you I just lost you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. In this particular case, the client was all about having massage. She had no, which was interesting. She had no fear about being touched.
Even though it was by a man and you just said she was terrified of...
Makes you think that maybe she wasn't really terrified of men. So that's the issue of what is real here.
Okay. And I saw several copies of your consent form. I didn't see any that were signed by the... I couldn't find ones that were signed.
Okay.
Did I miss that other...
Father signed the electronic version. Mother and I walked through it. I didn't get her signature on it. I had Carol Mellon as the TI. She had the legal party. I don't know what you call it. It was a court. It wasn't court ordered. I was working under the umbrella of someone with a court appointment. Both parents, the TI recommended that I have a court appointment. Both parents stipulated in writing to my court appointment. And the judge just didn't make an order. So consent is within that context.
Dr. Ocean, can you mute yourself, please? You are not muted.
Did you obtain assent?
Oh, yeah.
Written?
Written assent?
Yes.
From whom?
From the child client.
No.
Okay.
Father had legal decision-making authority. Got permission from the father.
Legally, you don't require that, but to be working with a teenager, assent is crucial.
Oh, yeah. We had a very close relationship. I have videos of us working together. That's the other thing, Dr. Mellon and I, once we realized that this is a case where what is real is going to be a real issue, started recording. There's hours and hours of video recordings of these sessions. And,
yeah. Those are my questions, thank you.
Krishna, you will need to mute Dr. Ocean. I don't think he's hearing me. His volume is turned down.
This is Dr. Davey. I believe, how close are the complainant and the lawyer in the room? Because
yeah, I think it's feedback.
Yeah, it's feedback. It's when Dr. Meyer goes to speak. It's as if both of their speakers are going. We can hear the licensee speaking even though she's muted. So those two microphones are crossing up somehow and providing the feedback when they are listening to Dr. Meyer.
I agree. That's what I'm seeing as well.
Yeah.
What Dr. Davey said.
Yeah, Dr. Ocean, he's muted. He was talking. You can't hear it.
The only have one microphone active.
We only have one microphone.
Mic's the mic picking up two speakers. The
all right.
Up on, well, both, on both of them. And so right. They distance themselves a little bit or just completely shut off one of the machine's audio, both microphone and sound. Otherwise, this is just going to continue and make it very difficult for us to track what's happening.
You want me to close mine?
Okay. You can just turn off the features. You can just mute it and turn your volume all the way down and continue. You're already muted, actually. But turn your volume down and just listen from this.
Maybe that will help.
Go into your Zoom client and go into settings, and you'll see those buttons, and then just go down to zero. So.
All right. So are there any further questions from the board members for Dr. Sade?
Yes, this is Dr. Gill.
Dr. Gill.
Dr. Sade, thank you for your testimony today. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about treatment plans, and I know that you've attended some ethics classes on record keeping. If you were to conduct this therapy today, what would your treatment plan look like? Would you include your treatment plan in your documentation, or would it be found elsewhere or in a separate documentation under your care or through the TI? How would it look like?
So if I were in this exact situation again, and I could go back in time, first of all, I learned quite a bit about person-centered treatment planning, which incorporates that motivational interviewing component. And I think I learned that treatment planning is an opportunity to develop engagement. And so I think that could have worked here as a tool. As far as I might take some of Dr. Mellon's reports. I did have them though, and incorporate them more clearly. But again, this is a case where what was so challenging is I would think we're going to, work on back and forth conversation today as a skill, and then she would come in and have a crisis about. So every session was a crisis. And so a treatment plan was very general about, okay, we're working on interpersonal skills generally, and that's in Dr. Mellon's report. I'm sorry, I can't get, it's like I wish you could see the rest of my file. It's like, and that's why nobody wants to take these cases. So I feel like I'm being evaluated on something that's very unusual.
Well, still the treatment planning idea does come from the APA guidelines. But I want to follow up on this. I mentioned before about the discharge plan. When you were asked to discontinue as the therapist, I was looking for a termination note or a discharge plan of some kind, and I didn't find it. Maybe it's somewhere else. Maybe it was with the TI. But I'm just wondering why you didn't complete a discharge plan at the time that you were asked to leave this treatment?
That's a good question. I've never been ordered by a judge to stop services. And so there was quite a bit of shock. I definitely gave oral. I supported the continuum of care. She continued briefly with Dr. Mellon. And I supported that by saying, okay, here's what you need to do, and here's the issues, but it was just verbal. I met with father and told him that. And when she eventually got a new therapist in December or January, that person called me and I consulted and said, okay, here's the case and here's strengths and challenges. But you're right that there isn't a written document called that, or called discharge.
Well, whatever you want to call it, any kind of termination statement that you are no longer providing care for this minor child.
The judge's order telling me to stop.
Well, that's not the same as a termination note from a therapist.
Oh, you're right.
Now, when you were asked to discontinue as the therapist, and you are no longer on the case, do you feel that you had a continuing responsibility to this patient to provide at least ideas for a new therapist?
That was, yes. And that's, Dr. Mellon took that role. I mean, it was just horrible. She had just gotten out of residential treatment and her therapist is ordered by the court, not requested, ordered to stop. Dr. Mellon provided some individual therapy, which is very difficult. Child didn't like Dr. Mellon very much.
And you've already testified that after you were ordered to terminate services by the court, you had conversations with the therapist who took over the therapy and with Dr. Mellon about her termination. Oh, she didn't formalize it in writing, if that's what you're asking, Doctor.
That is what I'm asking. In our world, if it's not written down, it didn't happen.
It's written in Dr. Mellon's file.
That's what's confusing to the board. Let me ask you, in your words, why was your treatment discontinued?
So you want me to guess why the judge did it?
Well, in your judgment, what was your impression?
I'm not comfortable doing that. I mean, it seems like the judge read the letter.
I don't know if you can hear me, but it's locked up. There we go. Can you repeat that, Dr. Gill? We couldn't hear you.
Well, I was asking, in the view of Dr. Sade, why was she terminated from the case?
Dr. Gill, if I may, the answer would necessarily involve speculation because the judge didn't give a specific reason, but it happened shortly after they got that defamatory letter from Paradigm.
Well, I'm sorry, I did just remember something. In the judge's letter removing me, ordering me to stop, she said the letter referencing the Paradigm letter was very disturbing.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just follow up on that from what Dr. Gill just said. Were you able to address with the judge your position on the Paradigm letter?
I was given no opportunity, she didn't collect any evidence. She had no, I had no opportunity to try and explain it or anything, it was just done.
And I should, if you'll forgive me, I should make the point that nobody at Paradigm checked with anybody on the treatment team here before writing that letter. And it was fundamentally inconsistent with the position they'd taken when the child was admitted to Paradigm.
Are you testifying, Mark, or is that argument? What is it?
However you want to receive it.
Oh, I'm not sure there was a question directed to you. Dr. Gill asked your client about her impressions why she was terminated.
Well, and I made the point, Jean, that it was that her answer would necessarily involve a certain amount of speculation. If you wanted to speculate, she'll be happy to do that.
All right.
Let me ask another question. It took 3 months for a new therapist to be provided for your former patient. Did you have any role or did you feel any responsibility in finding a new therapist for this patient?
I had been, first of all, I had been ordered to stop. Dr. Mellon tried to find somebody. Father tried to find somebody. There are very few people who are willing to work in cases that are involved in family court. You add the suspected condition in this case, and it took 3 months, and that's...
I would like to say that if that's the case, then to document your struggles in finding a new therapist, if in fact that was your role, or in part your role, it would be helpful.
Yeah.
In making your argument, if you document what you have done, it helps in justifying your case here.
Well,
the lack of documentation leaves questions open.
With all due respect, doctor, it was not her role to find a new therapist.
Well, anytime you're assigned as a therapist to someone, court order or not, you have, in my view, you have some responsibility ethically to find out, or at least to determine whether treatment is going to continue with another person, particularly if you know that this person has serious psychological issues.
Yeah, it was so sad. And I was scared. I've never had a judge order me in this way before. I consulted with Dr. Mellon and knew that she was available. And what happened, I'm remembering now, the child's mental health deteriorated at times. And then Lauren Day, mother's therapist, stepped in and provided emergency services. And before she did that, she would call me and say, okay, what do I, what's going on here? How do I handle this? So we would consult. But in order to provide the services, you know, did they have to be on the Maricopa roster for forensic services or not? It's not, and for some reason,
all I'm saying is I know that it's difficult. You make the point, and I believe you. The issue is it wasn't written down.
You're right.
Dr. Sade, can you be more specific? You did say that you took some CE credits. What specific classes did you take, and how many credits are we talking about?
Okay. Okay. I should have this for you. Would it be okay if during Dr. Mellon's testimony, I pull that up and then provide it to you?
That would be fine.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any further questions from the board?
Yes,
Dr. Meyer, could I ask one more?
Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Did you say at the beginning of this case you consulted with Lauren Day about the case?
Yes.
So you used her as a consultant. Was she later the therapist for the mother?
Yes.
Do you see a concern with dual relationship there, that this person might have information about the child that she wouldn't have, that could have impacted her therapeutic relationship with the mother?
Good question. In a regular situation, that's true, but in this case, there were releases signed all around. So.
Dr. Mellon, Jorge, and I met regularly and shared clinical data.
And the parties had signed the
lease.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions for Dr. Sade?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I have several, and maybe I've touched on them already, but one of my concerns indeed is record keeping. And, you know, for example, the service agreement and consent, it's for board members. It's on PDF page 174. At the top of the consent, it lists the client as the mother. And then at the bottom of the consent, it lists the father as the guardian. I don't see anything talking about the child. Which I think is concerning. It also doesn't describe what's going to be provided. It just talks about therapy in global terms. And so it's not clear that she's working with a TI on this. It just sounds as if she's supposed to do therapy. It doesn't really involve all these other incredibly complex issues that became involved.
Dr. Flowers, can you, what page number was that again?
It's PDF, let me get this here, it's 174.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering, you know, could you respond to that, Dr. Sade?
Well, nobody has ever raised the issue that there would need to be a special consent form in order for me to work in a team model with other colleagues. All I know is everyone consented here.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is they consented that the child be treated, but it doesn't really also involve the incredible other things that were provided, such as working with TI, working with the courts, coordinating inpatient referrals. I mean, the CPS referral, yes, indeed, that makes sense, but it got to be a whole lot more complicated than that. And the liaison frequently with Dr. Millen, you know, it's not really indicated in here. And, you know, that to me is concerning.
Well, if I may, Doc, I'm confused because I assume you're talking about forms that were completed at the inception of the relationship long before any of these other things could be known.
And there's ongoing consent.
Okay, and I don't see documentation for that either.
Well, and what's awkward here is Dr. Mellon's recommendations are legally binding on the clients. So does
okay.
The consent have to come from Dr. Mellon?
Well, you know, what I'm saying here is in the paperwork here, you know, the consent for treatment and so forth, it doesn't indicate that you will be coordinating those kind of things with Dr. Mellon, because it wasn't as if you were just meeting with the child for therapy. There was a whole lot more to that.
You're right. That would be a good way to improve my in that document for those cases.
And, you know, then I think in the last meeting we had talked about concerns about information about diagnosis and treatment plans, where simply a diagnosis and a presenting problem were indicated in it?
Well, just in that template, just in that, if you look at that one square that they call the simple practice box, yes, if you only look at that, then you won't see the information.
Okay, and I guess I need to figure out where that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a memorandum. I don't have the documents right now. Mark.
Okay, but you know, again, you know, memorandums are fine, but they're not considered really part of the clinical record.
This was in the clinical record.
Okay.
And this is Travis Hunt, if I could chime in. You know, part of the record here is not just the clinical record, but the family court record and the reports that Dr. Mellon supplied to the court, reflecting work that Dr. Sade had done. And we're gonna be getting into those reports with Dr. Mellon. And you know, as far as you know, consent regarding other aspects of work that Dr. Sade provided based on Dr. Mellon's recommendations, we'll be talking about that as well.
Okay, and again, there's also, I think I asked previously, at one point, there was a battery of, it looked like a school psychologist kind of evaluation of the child and then recommendations to the school. Again, I don't see that as typically done when you're doing child therapy. So I'm concerned that that's not really explained, you know, the rationale within this as well.
Well, I'm a school psychologist.
Well, that's good, you know, but it doesn't really indicate here you were being asked to provide that aspect simply because you have the skill.
Oh, well, my understanding is that school psychology falls under the umbrella of a regular diagnostic.
Well, it can, but it needs to be considered part of a treatment plan of some type. And I don't see that. Maybe it's somewhere else. Those are my main questions. And you know, I also mentioned that they're concerned about the frequency of contacts and incredibly expensive sessions that sometimes involve travel to the father's house and so on. I just questioned the appropriateness of those kind of activities.
I'll let Dr. Mellon address that.
Okay, thank you. Those were my main questions. Thank you.
All right, any other questions for Dr. Sade? All right, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sade, for being here. We may have further questions down the road. I do want to follow up, though. I will follow up with the types of CE credits that you took and how many.
Dr. Ms. Shreve, I have a question for Dr. Sade.
Yes, Ms. Dr. Millard.
Yes. My question, you know, and I think I raised this at the last meeting as well, Dr. Sade, and it's regarding billing. And I'm, you know, I know you, you consult with other therapists, and so could you give some more information on your billing practices and when you make the determination to bill a certain way versus, you know, when you're traveling? I mean, just all of those different things and how you arrived at these amounts.
Okay. I keep it pretty simple. My hourly rate is $220, and that's whether I'm doing therapeutic supervision at IKEA, or I'm writing reports, or I'm, that's just my hourly rate. And so I bill in 15-minute increments. I'm not sure what else to say.
When you go on shopping trips, how do you bill those and the travel and, you know, all of those different aspects?
When I'm with the dyad, that's the therapy session. So usually the way we would start is child would be dropped off by mother at my at the office. I would check in with child, how's your day going? How do you feel about this upcoming visit? And the clock has started. I then stay with the child while, you know, her and father and I get in a car and we go do things. That's the therapeutic supervision service. That's why most people won't pay me to do it. And I don't do it very often. Does that answer your question?
When you started working with the family and the father, how did you explain your billing, and were they aware that every 5 minutes, you know, 15 minutes? I'm just curious as to, I know I would have been shocked if I got a $35,000 bill at the end of a few weeks. Mm-hmm.
And it's so father wasn't shocked, and father doesn't believe he was overcharged. It's in my consent that my hourly rate is $220, and that I bill in 15-minute increments.
And doctor, if I may, Dr. Mellon will testify. She did a survey of rates charged by psychologists in the metro area, and $220 an hour is at the low end of the spectrum. I know it's not, I mean.
Yeah, and I understand that. In generally, I mean, my knowledge, and it, you know, I'm not saying I have the full picture, is generally those are traditional therapy sessions. When you start getting into doing all of the different types of services, that's where I'm kind of raising the question on the billing and what is the typical standard of charges, you know, for all of the, you know, you're going on a shopping trip. You know, that becomes a very expensive shopping trip at $220 an hour, plus you're buying stuff. I mean, the person is buying stuff. So that's kind of where my questions are coming from.
So this is Travis Hunt again, and Dr. Mellon is going to get into the standard practice cases in this area and the rates that apply.
Okay, thank you.
And I just want to clarify, I didn't force my services on anyone. These clients were asking me for these services.
And they knew, and they were understood the your cost.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any further questions for Dr. Sade? All right. Hearing none, Mr. Madone, did you have another witness?
Mr. Harrison,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Harrison, I'm sorry. You're coming up with a different name on my screen.
I've been told worse than that. We do have two more witnesses, actually, but the most think we ought to go with
Carol.
Yeah, Dr. Mellon. Travis, are you familiar with Dr. Mellon?
Dr. Cohen should be on the line. Mark.
On the line?
She should be on the line, I think. Dr. Cohen, can you announce your presence if you're here?
You might need to take your phone off mute.
Dr. Cohen, are you with us?
I am unmuted. This is Dr. Sylvia Cohen.
Great. All right. Well, welcome to the meeting today. We appreciate you being here. I am Tammy Shreve. I am the chair of the board. I am going to swear you in. Dr. Cohen, do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right. And can you please, for the record, state your name?
Sylvia Ann Cohen.
Okay, thank you very much. Go ahead, Mr. Harrison. Did you have any questions?
Just briefly, very briefly, Madam Chair. Please tell the board about your professional status, how long you've been practicing, and a brief recap of your professional experience, including specialized training.
Yes, my name is Dr. Sylvia Cohen. I have been in practice for approximately 30 years. For about 20 years, I was lead psychologist in Scottsdale Unified School District. I've also worked with the Arizona Psychological Association Consortium on the training committee. I was the clinical internship director. I've worked with the Arizona Association of School Psychologists. I was the president of that organization and held other offices in that organization.
Dr. Cohen, I've lost you. Can everybody else hear her?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Maybe it's just me.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I can hear you really well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was also the elected National Association of School Psychologists delegate for 6 years. I have taught at Arizona State University, Northern Arizona University, and Argosy University until it closed. I have been involved actively in training of school psychologists and in training of psychologists through the consortium.
How long have you known Dr. Sade?
Since 1995.
What was your involvement in her recruitment to Arizona, her training, and her preparation for licensure as a psychologist in Arizona?
Yes, Dr. Sade was in training in Minnesota with one of my previous interns and someone who was on the faculty of Arizona State University and then moved up to Minnesota and was on the faculty there. She had called me about a student that she had that she thought was very, very amazing and had given me a recommendation. Dr. Sade then applied through the APIC process, and we interviewed her at Scottsdale Unified School District, and we selected her to do an internship with us, and she also did a postdoctoral residency with us in Scottsdale Unified School District.
May I assume that the student to whom you're former intern referred to as amazing was Dr. Sade?
That is correct.
What is your opinion of Dr. Sade's integrity?
I think she is has the highest degree of integrity as a psychologist. I've never had any thoughts of anything as being just a very responsible individual with the highest degree of integrity.
And have you staffed Dr. Sade on cases involving patients?
In terms of school psychology, we continue to do some things together because we've also started a nonprofit, and part of that nonprofit is doing psychoeducational evaluations, and I've worked with Dr. Sade on some of those, and she's done an amazing job. So we have talked about students. We also talked about putting some things together in terms of group supervision for other people working with adolescents, because I continue to work with adolescents, although not in Scottsdale Unified School District at this time.
Would you refer a family member to Dr. Sade for treatment?
Without hesitation, I definitely would refer a family member or friend to Dr. Sade for treatment.
I have nothing further.
All right. Are there any questions for Doctor? All right, hearing none, Doctor, I'd like to thank you for being here today and participating in this meeting.
All right, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Harrison, did you have another?
Yes, our last witness is Dr. Carol Mellon, and she'll be examined by my colleague, Travis Hunt. I think they're...
We're on as well. We're on right now, Mark.
Okay. I have trouble.
Right. Dr. Mellon, I am also going to need to swear you in.
Yes.
My name is Tamara Shreve. I am the chair. Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right. If for the record, could you state your name?
Carol Mellon.
All right. Thank you for being here today. Mr. Hunt, go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Shreve. So very briefly, Dr. Mellon, so that the board members know your general background, where did you receive your degrees?
I received my degree at Arizona State University, both my doctoral and my master's degree.
And you currently practice as a psychologist, correct?
I do, and I'm licensed both in Arizona and California.
And how long have you been practicing in Arizona?
Over 40 years.
As part of the services that you provided for the family in this case, you were appointed as the therapeutic interventionist by the court, correct?
I was.
How many times have you been appointed to serve as a therapeutic interventionist? And I'm just going to refer to that as TI.
60 or 70 times over my history.
And what do you think is the frequency of the appointment? As in, how many times per year are you appointed, do you think?
Several.
Okay. How did, you were initially appointed by the TI early in 2019, correct?
I was initially appointed as TI. Yeah. Yes.
How did Dr. Sade become involved as the child's therapist?
She became involved after my referral. I began working with the child. I met each parent first, and then I met the child. The child's understanding of our goal was for me to reunify her with her father. She had not spent time with her father in quite a long time. She reported to me that she was afraid of her father. She had many reports of abusive incidents, her perception of abusive incidents involving her father. After initially almost our first session, she determined that she was not going to at any time meet with her father, and she didn't particularly like meeting with me. I determined early on that I needed to get some assistance, and she had specifically talked with me about incidents that she believed were abusive incidents. One was when her father had stepped on her stuffed animal as a child, and there were others. And when she would describe and talk to me about these incidents, she would become anxious and upset. She appeared to be activated. This went on through a couple of sessions, and she began to talk to me about a lot of somatic concerns. She felt ill a good deal of the time. She reported to me that she was extremely angry. I knew in my TI role that I would not be able to move forward, and I had no chance of success unless I considered pulling a team together. I don't do this in every TI case, but I certainly do it when there are complex cases. I have served as a therapist in a TI case when another individual is a therapeutic interventionist, and I have also at other times pulled teams together. The first individual that I really needed to deal with was the child, and so I made a referral to Dr. Sade.
Thank you. So to get a little bit into the work that Dr. Sade did, as part of your role as TI, you submitted TI reports to the board, to the court, correct?
Yes, I did, and that is required. It's required that I do it at least every 90 days. I frequently, particularly in complex cases, submit more often than every 90 days. This was an extremely complex case. So at different times, I would submit reports a month apart or even a couple of days apart.
Thank you. So let's go ahead and walk through some of the TI. And on those reports, Dr. Sade in her role as therapist for the child would provide information to you, correct?
Dr. Sade provided information to me regularly whenever I asked, and also when she felt there was information I needed to have in order for my my reunification, either working with the parents or when I had the child working with me. Again, my goal was reunification. So she would assist me both when I asked and when she felt it was important to do so, and in writing reports.
And when you would recommend that Dr. Sade be involved in any specific aspect of the matter, would you make recommendations to the court?
Yes. I would move forward. The court does not expect that they need to give me permission. If I determine, for instance, that I need for Dr. Sade to do an assessment, if I determine that I need Dr. Sade to help with the reunification, which in this case was going to be very graduated and would involve moving the child from the office, outside of the office, to local, to have experiences in the community, maybe play miniature golf or go to a shopping center. I did not need to ask the court permission to do that. I understood I'd been doing this work for a long time, that after a child leaves the office, the next stage is going to be, more often than not, almost every time, with a supervisor. I do not use a non-therapeutic supervisor. I have used Dr. Sade in this role, but I have used other therapeutic supervisors, including Kathy Maholik. There's a whole list of them. And I use a therapeutic supervisor because, along with being out with the child and the parent in this case, Dr. Sade was charged with assisting father, for instance. When he was speaking with his daughter, so that he would understand and be sensitive to maybe something his daughter had said, or this is a child that frequently misinterpreted what was said to her by her father, to assist and challenge the child's misinterpretations. That's not something a non-trained therapeutic supervisor can do. And so that would be an example of something she'd be doing on these outings, for instance. This was also therapy. I expected the outings to last for 3, 4, 5 hours. And they did start at the office. And by the way, I have done my own therapeutic supervision at times when the relationship I've been able to maintain with the child is better than when I was able to initially develop with this child. And the child comes to my office with a parent. With the parent, and we spend a bit of time together in the office. I leave the office with the child. We will go somewhere, and we will oftentimes go get an ice cream, do something of this sort, or spend some time together, and then we come back to the office. Sometimes I will actually meet at a location, and the parent leaves, and the non-aligned parent joins us. And we spend time together, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And this is standard of what we do. Eventually, the goal is for the child to leave the office. We start, have a meeting together. The child leaves the office with the parent. And then after 3 or 4 hours, comes back and we hold another meeting. I wasn't able to get that far. We can go into that, but that's when we stopped, because we couldn't get any further without Dr. Sade accompanying the child.
Thank you. A question has come up about standard rates for therapeutic supervision. In what you know about the rates charged by Dr. Sade in this matter related to therapeutic supervision, is that atypical? Is it out of line with what you understand is standard, or what you have charged, for example?
A non-therapeutic supervisor in my business charges $150 an hour. That supervisor has no credential, does not have a master's degree, doesn't have a doctoral degree, and doesn't even have a bachelor's degree. And their charge is $150 an hour. When I am I charge $250 an hour. And I didn't know exactly what Dr. Sade charged, but $220. Some of the folks on the court roster charge much more than I do, $400 an hour for supervision. If they leave the office with the child and are supervising, they're charging $400 an hour.
And the services that Dr. Sade provided in this matter, they were all done in line with your recommendations to the court, correct?
Yes, they were. Yes.
Okay, so getting to those specific recommendations, let's go ahead and walk through, for the board's benefit, some of the reports that you submitted to the court outlining services that Dr. Sade was providing in the context of, you know, what the work was being done by the therapy team. So turning first to your April 29, 2019 TI report, is there anything in that report that you believe that the board should know about this matter and when would be helpful to the board?
I think so. And I've had an opportunity to listen this morning to Dr. Sade's testimony and also questions asked of her. So I want to be able to provide for the board a context as to how Dr. Sade participated in the therapeutic intervention process. And remember, she was just one piece of my therapy team. I also had Lauren Day, and I also had Dennis Ryan working with the father. Again, this is not unusual in complex cases. I'd like to read from this.
Please do.
And I have noted on the first page of my report, April 29th, since the time of my initial update with the court, Reese, the minor child, has been referred for individual counseling with Shauna Sade, PhD. Reese has been seen weekly.
I'm going to interrupt. We need to use only initials.
Sorry.
So if you could just use the initial of
yes, client. I will. I'm reading it. I'm sorry. RP has been seen weekly in individual counseling with the eventual goal of assisting RP with reduction in anxiety and with developing more rational beliefs about previous life experiences and relationships. RP participated in a diagnostic assessment with Dr. Sade. It was determined that in order for her to begin the reunification process, that means to actually meet with the father, I couldn't go further with that, the child needed to develop interpersonal awareness and skills to help her more effectively manage her emotions. I go on in this report, I'm talking about the focus of my work, and I also note on here what I referred to in my first referral, the child presented as being easily triggered by a range of stimuli associated with attachment insecurities. She reported numerous somatic concerns, and she appeared to have less well-developed interpersonal skills, all reasons for my referral. Also important at this time, this is in April, at school, because of reported medical issues, she is unable to climb stairs. She's not involved with any type of school physical education program. She reports that she has numerous food allergies. She is frequently ill, and she's absent from school. So this is my beginning work with this child. She also starts talking to me about traumatic experiences that she's had with her father that are terrifying for her and that interfere in a significant way with her being able to have any meetings with her father in my office. She reports, she was at a restaurant with her father when an argument broke out between her father and another patron. This was terrifying. She remembers the patron being frightened of their father. She remembers her father shaking his fist, yelling, and swearing at the patron. She remembers police being called. I asked her to tell me more about the things that were frightening for her. She was frightened when she was sweeping the garage floor and her father was dissatisfied with her work and told her she wasn't doing it correctly. These are the kinds of things I was also looking at that when I'm making a decision about who I'm going to refer to for a child's therapist, I've referred to lots of different therapists, always on the court roster, but this child was evidencing some trauma, some very major anxiety reaction. She seemed to be very activated. That is another reason I chose to refer to Dr. Sade. I refer to other folks besides Dr. Sade to do this kind of work. She reported that her mother had confirmed with her that her father could be out of control and he could hurt her, and had shared with her that in 2001, when her father became angry with the mother, he had tried to choke her mother. She has a real fear of her father. I can't do this alone. We talk about a gun and there being a gun in the home. Father did report to me there were no unsecured guns. The child, RP, also reported their father doesn't provide adequately for her physical needs. So all of this is going on. At the time of my meeting in 2019, RP told me she would not see her father again. He was dangerous. He's angry. Interestingly, she saw herself as very angry too. I began working also. My job here is to work with the child and a parent, child with mother, child with father, parents together, parents individually. I'm doing a lot of different parts of this. And this is why I, when I see there's a need for each member of my therapeutic group to have their own therapist, I will start bringing in other individuals. Mother was open to my recommendation that the child begin her own counseling with a new therapist with a focus on assisting with anxiety reduction. And I did explain that to mother, and that's absolutely one of the reason that I referred her over there. Let's see. It was very important for me to do this because I also needed to have mother's support so that she and I could, so that she would begin to trust my work with her daughter. So I needed for her to understand that I was taking care of her daughter's needs above and beyond just having a child come in and know she had to reunify. I need mother to support that this child needed some additional treatment, and she understood it, and it was helpful for our relationship, my relationship with the mother. After consultation with our RP's therapist, it appeared that the therapeutic intervention process could finally go forward with meetings. I'm noting that after a period of time when Dr. Sade had worked with RP, it appeared as if we were at a place where the child was no longer so fearful that she couldn't even meet in the same office. So, of course, Dr. Sade had to investigate that, had to spend time with the child, had to help the child work through some of her trauma experiences, some of her anxieties and fears. This is something that I discussed and talked with Dr. Sade about regularly. And then there was a point in time when Dr. Sade was able to alert me, okay, I think now you can have some meetings with the child and with the father. One of the concerns we had is that her avoidant behavior had been lengthy. She had not had contact with her father in several months. And even the contact before that that she had was contact in which she had shared with me she felt uncomfortable and fearful. The longer the avoidant behavior continued, the more her anxiety would escalate. So I was able to, by working with Dr. Sade, at least try to get moving with the process of having her room in the room with the father much more quickly and efficiently than if I didn't have someone in there working with a therapist in there working with her. I also then talk about some of my goals. I move forward. I plan to coordinate my treatment with the treatment provided by individual therapists, and a plan to proceed with homework assignments for RP and her father. And at a time that RP and father are ready to leave the office and engage in time-limited activities away from our counseling sessions in the office. I talked about how they initially need to be highly structured. They need to occur at locations where there might be less interaction. And then they would graduate to activities that would allow them to have more interaction. And so I talk about all of that and explain all of that to the judge at the time of one of my initial reports to the judge, so she will understand what it is that I'm doing and the plan I am following.
Okay, so moving on to the next report that you submitted, which was in the end of June 2019. And again, this was before the 90 days that you were required to submit a report, correct?
Well, actually, I think I've been, yes, because the last one was in April, but I don't always wait 90 days between submission.
And that is a reflection of the complexity of this case.
Yes, right? Yes.
Is there anything in this report that you think the board should be aware of?
I have indicated here that I have regularly consulted with mental health professionals involved in this case, including Lauren Day and Shauna Sade, I have been reviewing medical and educational records as they've been made available to me. I have goals, a treatment plan. Number one, I'm going to assist assisting RP with developing interpersonal awareness skills and skills to help her manage her emotions more effectively. This was a very important part of Dr. Sade's work with RP, helping this child manage her emotions. She became so activated, she simply could not be in a room with him. She wasn't able to be with him. I had to talk with Dr. Sade about this. She would come in and talk to Dr. Sade about how uncomfortable she was. She wasn't sleeping at night at different times. She wasn't able to, she would dread coming into the office. As time moved on, this started to dissipate. She was actually able to come into the office, and we have videos of her having really a good time with her father in the office, interacting a wide range of activities. In May of 2019, Dr. Sade had completed several sessions of EMDR therapy and individual counseling with RP, and she reported that RP was better able to manage her emotions and work through her avoidant behaviors. She's going to be participating in the TI process with her father. And then I talk about what I'm going to be doing with, and then I talk about my assistance with anxiety management with the mother. And I talk about helping the parents communicate more effectively. This is important, I think. And this is an example of the kind, this I happened to write down. I didn't write them all down. This one I included in my TI report so the judge would have a flavor of how Dr. Sade was participating. On page 5, Shauna Sade has been meeting regularly with RP and when appropriate has held parent-child meetings. A summary of her observations include Troy is motivated to participate in parent-child interaction therapy and has demonstrated progress. Mother maintains a close relationship with her daughter, has participated in psychoeducation to gain knowledge about adolescent development and to encourage RP seeking friendships with age mates and to encourage RP's independence at their home. It was reported that RP continues to regularly co-sleep with her mother and that RP frequently requires her mother to be with her in the bathroom. I don't know these things unless they're reported to me. Dr. Sade also reports that mother continues to be anxious when RP has spent time with her father at our office. There is concern that mother's anxieties may be transmitted to RP when RP leaves the office. And then mother continues to report that RP returns home from sessions with her father or outings with her father that are supervised, appearing anxious, upset, and physically ill. Her presentation during her interactions with father at my office or on supervised field trips, as reported to me by Dr. Sade, is quite different, with RP appearing relaxed and comfortable and enjoying time with her father. Mother has shared that she has been told by RP that she is not being genuine and that she's acting when her father on their excursions or during their meetings appear to be enjoying themselves at the office.
Ma'am, we have these reports and we've read them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe just conceptually what you think is important in them?
Well, I think I found what was conceptually important in this one. Let me look real quickly here. I think what's important here is on page 6.
And which report are you talking about?
This is the June 28th report. If you look on page 6 at the bottom of that report, that page.
But in essence, I think, are you saying that you oversaw all of Dr. Sade's activities and you are in agreement with them?
Oversaw is probably.
Yeah, I'm not directing what she's doing. I am not supervising Dr. Sade, but I am benefiting from her being able to share with me both her observations and interactions. Okay.
Just to provide some clarity here for why this particular report was important, in it you state the treatment plan that was developed for this matter, correct?
Yes, this is my treatment plan that I have developed. Okay.
So moving on to the July 24th, 2019 report. This is the first report that was submitted after RP was admitted to Paradigm, correct?
Yes.
And in it,
do you discuss the joint decision by the therapy team to have RP admitted to Paradigm and the reasons for that?
Yes, and I want to be really clear because it may not be clear in my report. I did not have the level of familiarity or knowledge of adolescent outpatient facilities that may exist in this community or close by communities. And I wanted to be able to find a residential center that was going to be appropriate for the child. I asked Dr. Sude to assist with this. Her experience working with kids, working with teenagers, and directly working with inpatient treatment and residential treatment facilities is far greater than mine. So I depended on her to assist me in trying to locate a good fit for a center. I also asked Lauren Day to assist me, both of them, and they did as I asked them to do. And I didn't supervise that. I asked in a collegial fashion for them to assist me. If you want, let's see. I did have a meeting, and this is maybe this is quite integral. I now was going to have my first meeting where I would meet first with the father and the child at the beginning of the meeting, and then the father and the child would leave the office for 2 hours and then come back in. I'd then meet with the child first, then the father, and then we would have a joint meeting. I follow this plan with literally all my cases with TI as we graduate to a place where the child is now spending time with the non-aligned parent. So we get to this place and the child comes in and says, I'm not going. There's no way I'm going. We talk. She's explained to me that she is again feeling anxious. She has talked with her mother. Some of the information that she is getting from when she talks with her mother has caused her to feel anxious again. Now, I'm going to back up just a moment. I have already determined, after spending the amount of time I did on this case, that there has been a history of ongoing, active, obsessive alienation. I've had many, many cases done therapeutic intervention for many, many years. This is one of the most obsessed cases of alienating behavior on the part of a parent of any case I've ever worked on. I knew at this point in time I couldn't go any further. Either I wrote to the judge and said, we're done, and you know what? Probably in 75, 80, 90% of cases I would, because the parents would not have the funds to take things to the next step. Except I have had cases when we get to this place where something else is done. And in the literature, you can read about it. And that is, if I had presented this case at that point in time, we didn't have Dr. Sude and we didn't have the funds to pay to try to do the way we did, I would have reported to the court that exactly what was happening. And it is possible, I can't say highly likely, but it is possible that the court would have reversed custody at that moment and the child would have immediately been transferred over to the father's home. That was the other option. We didn't do that. What we did, and one of the reasons I was very concerned about this, is that this we still had a very highly anxious child. And I didn't know how that would be handled by that child. I had concerns, Dr. Sude had concerns, and we fortunately had the option of a residential treatment center and a separation test, both for, at this point in time, some suspicion of medical child abuse and for dealing with this alienating behavior. If I could separate the child from the parent, where the child was going home and regularly getting feedback from the mother, plus seeing mother very anxious herself about this meeting, if we were able to make that separation, I would have a better understanding about the alienating behavior and more information to give to the court. So at that point in time, we determined together that, that this would be a good course, this would be the best course of action for the child. And we had the agreement of the mother, the father, and the child. This all went forward and just as it should have.
And in addition to submitting this report to the court, you also submitted a treatment plan for the, yes, for the child while at Paradigm, correct?
Yes.
And can you explain generally the purpose behind that treatment plan?
One of the things we did before selecting that, once we had a treatment facility identified, we talked with that treatment facility together as a team. Myself, Dr. Sade, Lauren Day. And we asked questions. My questions had to do with the experience of treatment team members at Paradigm and working in high conflict divorce cases and in working with children where there had been ongoing alienation. We also asked questions about their experience working with medical child abuse. We asked about separation. I was told by one of the directors at Paradigm that he himself had been a therapeutic interventionist. He understood alienation. He understood exactly what it was that we were working with. And then we offered treatment recommendations to them in writing so that they would be able to see after our discussions with them. We put in writing our understanding of their understanding of what our expectations were. I could list these. You probably have them. Do you have?
they have them, yes.
Yeah. Increased Reese's ability to differentiate her personal experiences from those of her mother.
Now, can I interrupt? We're already familiar with
okay, them. You have all of that. Yes. Fine.
Ms. Galvin, correct me if I'm off base here, but can we focus on your role as working with Dr. Sade?
Yes, in fact.
And I think we've read all of this information. We understand why she went there and what was in there. Just, I guess we're trying to understand was what was your role? What is your, given your experience, do you feel that those actions were correct that was, you know, presented by Dr. Sade? We understand the process. We understand what happened. I think we're looking at you as a testimony of what is your thoughts on what occurred.
My thoughts on what occurred about what?
In the actions of Dr. Sade and in the complaint.
So in the very next report that was submitted to the court, there are three specific instances where Dr. Mellon is providing recommendations regarding Dr. Sade's services, including while the child was at Paradigm. So in the August 7, 2019 report,
I give some very specific recommendations. Is that what you want?
Yes. And then if you could, after you state what the recommendations were, speak to Dr. Sade's work in line with those recommendations and whether, you know, what she did was in line with the recommendations.
Yes. I recommended and written to the judge that I was recommending that Dr. Sade inform and coordinate all Reese's supports and services at her school when she returned from Paradigm. I recommended that all the emails sent to by parents to the school include Dr. Sade until it was determined it was not any longer required. I recommended that she send Dr. Sade periodic update regarding RP's progress and counseling to both parents. I recommended that she take responsibility for maintaining contact with RP's current medical providers, dietitians, and nutritionists, and inform the therapy team as needed so that we could have updated information about that.
So moving on to the September 4, 2019 TI report. In it, you discuss some of the concerns regarding the mother-daughter relationship.
Specifically on
page 2. Can you speak to that?
You'll have to tell me what line. The Department of Child Safety was conducting an investigation, and a forensic medical expert in California was going to be analyzing RP's medical records and evidence to determine whether child abuse has occurred. Until the investigation was complete, DCS has determined that RP is not allowed to have unsupervised contact with the mother.
So is it fair to say that this report is the one where you address in detail some of the concerns leading up to the child's admission to Paradigm?
No. The admission, I had suspected, Dr. Sade had suspected, we spent some time, this is a very complicated diagnosis and we don't make it. but it's very complicated. I had many, many concerns. I had the concerns because the medical records are not coming to Dr. Sade. They're coming to me. And I'm getting 400, 500, and 600 pages of medical documents, and I have lots of concerns. I confer with Dr. Sade. Together, we identify, we found an expert that we could talk with to get additional information. Yes. So
on page 5 of this report, you request the court officially appoint the entire therapy team.
Yes.
Correct. What was the reason for that?
I asked the judge in at least 3 separate reports to create an order of appointment for Dr. Sade, for Lauren Day, and for Dennis Ryan. I asked, and in the last report, I indicated the reason I'm asking for this is that I had concerned. It was a very complex case. It was a case in which I was concerned that there might be a board complaint, and I was also concerned that there could be litigation. The only one on the treatment team that had any protection was me, because I was under an order of appointment. I foresaw that something was going to happen that was going to be problematic, and problematic for Dr. Sade and possibly Lauren Day as they served in their professional role.
And then at some point while Child was at Paradigm, there began to be divisions between the Arizona team and the Paradigm team, correct?
Yes.
After Child was discharged from, well, to back up, Child was discharged from Paradigm at your recommendation, correct?
Yes. The treatment team was not following my recommendations. They were not following the recommendations when they first went in and we identified what our goals were. My recommendations were that, for instance, that the mother and the child stood still, not be having contact with one another. And by that time, we had a DCS investigation in place. And they ignored the DCS investigation. And they were insisting on moving forward with parent-child contact with the mother. At that point in time, the child had to be removed. She had to leave.
Were there also concerns with father's ability to pay for the inpatient, continue to pay for the inpatient?
There were concerns about that.
So after RP was discharged from Paradigm, you have 2 reports that are in quick succession on September 4 and September 5, 2019.
Yes.
In those reports, you discuss the letter that was sent by the director of Paradigm.
Yes.
To mother and to you.
Yes.
Although addressed to the court. Can you discuss generally your view of that letter?
Okay. It was, one of the copies was sent to me. I believe it was also copied to Dr. Sade. I was asked by Dr. Newman to share this with the court. I did not. First of all, Dr. Newman was in not a court-informed therapist in this matter. She didn't have, it was a HIPAA violation. She didn't, father did not release her to share any information with anyone. And interestingly, in our meetings with judges that work in family court, Judge Ray, who was at that time the presiding judge in family court, had reported one of the things that he absolutely doesn't want are non-court-informed therapists that for some reason are working with a child in a custody matter to offer recommendations to him as a judge with regard to custody or with regard to services that are being provided by a court-informed therapist. All of these are good reasons not to send this forward, and I didn't. But later, we did send it forward.
And then at some point thereafter, Dr. Sade was ordered by the court to discontinue providing services to Child, correct?
Yes.
Was Dr. Sade, even after that, fully compliant with finding a new therapist?
Yes. Dr. Sade initially, I determined, we actually had no idea after we got this order for Dr. Sade to stop being a part of the case. we didn't know how long it would be before the judge allowed or made another appointment or another recommendation could be made. Dr. Sade was to have no contact. I was the TI. So I began with Dr. Sade's support and assistance and with her reviewing reports and advising me, I attempted to do supportive treatment. Now, you have to understand, the child has come home, and it's interesting when the child came home. One of the first things she told me is that the treatment team had told her that I shouldn't be, that Dr. Sade could not do good work. They told her that it was probably dangerous for her to live with her father. There had been discussion about my having Alzheimer's through the Malibu. So all of this is going on. I have her back in my office now, and she's supposed to trust me to move forward. But I worked with her. I provided support. I relied on Dr. Sade to assist me with this. And then I reached out to very quickly to Phoenix Children's Hospital to see who we could find that could provide therapy for this child, and talked with someone at PCH, and I can't remember who it is right now, and we identified some folks that at least had some understanding of medical child abuse and that were also on the court roster. And I don't know if Dr. Sade remembers, but she and I then talked about a therapist that could replace her, and I don't know if she remembers this, that she actually got on the phone with that therapist and talked with her current therapist, Julie Skakoon. And Julie Skakoon had depended on Dr. Sade and made some calls to her to get information about the child and about the case so that she could be advised before she started. And by the way, Julie Skakoon was very hesitant about taking this case. It was probably, and she, this child really needed treatment. And it was probably Dr. Sade that talked Julie Skakoon into taking the case. I didn't think anyone was going to take this case.
So is it fair to say that Dr. Sade was fully cooperative in the transition, after, even after the court ordered her to stop providing services to a child?
She was cooperative. I think her efforts at talking with Ms. Skakoon and made a big difference in Ms. Skakoon, who is very well trained and has a lot of experience in family court, that she took the case. And it was difficult to find someone for lots of different reasons, not the least of is how litigious this case is. And by the way, Julie Skakoon is under court appointment.
So turning back a little bit to the TI reports, as part of that, you relied on, like I asked this previously, you relied on information from Dr. Sade to provide your recommendations, correct?
Yes.
And did you ever have any concerns about the comprehensiveness or the accuracy or anything along those lines with the records that Dr. Sade, with the reports that Dr. Sade provided to you?
I never.
The board has asked questions about the range of services provided in this case. Can you speak a little bit to the range of services that are typical in this type of case and the billing practices associated with them?
The range of services, meaning therapy, assessment, Dr. Sade began this by doing an assessment, very complicated. I think she absolutely did need to do this assessment. She did one of the reasons, a very important piece of this assessment is that this child was failing in school. She missed school, she was failing in school, and she hated school. I thought it was quite important that Dr. Sade get some additional information. I think she did some psychoeducation. She did a psychoeducational evaluation. Eventually, we were able to use that information when a determination was being made, and Dr. Sade was assisting me with this. She knows so much more about this than I do, as to whether or not special education services would be an appropriate option, and the school that she had been attending, and what kinds of services they would make available to her in her current school versus her going to Chaparral. So all of this, we were able to rely on the information that was gleaned from the psychoeducation report in the earliest assessment that she did.
And you're generally aware of the rates that psychologists use in these types of cases, correct?
When I'm doing a child custody case, it is not unusual for me to charge $50,000 by the time I'm finished with a complicated case. When I'm doing cases like this, I haven't really looked at what I charge, but I'm sure my fees are very high. I spend a lot of time on this case, and I not only charge for time that I'm interfacing with a client, I charge when I'm reading records, I had thousands of pages of medical records, which I did not read. Obviously, I sent those out. I'm not a physician, would not be appropriate. But when I'm reading records, when I'm reading anything related to this case, if I'm talking to the BIA in this case, all of this is charged at $250 an hour in 15-minute increments, and my fees have recently gone up to $325 an hour.
And what is your, having, you know, worked with Dr. Sade in this matter and knowing her, what is your general view of her her work and how she is as a psychologist?
You know, I've been in practice for over 40 years. I've had collegial relationships with other very fine psychologists. When I met Dr. Sade, I was struck, first of all, by how bright she is. She's brilliant. And that's fine because there's a lot of brilliant psychologists out there. But I was also struck by how compassionate, caring, and sensitive she was and how much she wanted to help children. I found it interesting that she gave up a job where she was making a six-figure salary, and she did that because she wanted to work with kids and she wanted to make a difference in children's lives. I don't know if I could be that altruistic myself. She was very well, she had a secure position and on an upward mobility in a legal firm doing, I guess, difficult work, but she left the job completely. She wanted to help kids. And I think that's testimony to who this person is. She's an amazing psychologist and in a collegial relationship. I'm so very happy that we found each other and that we have been able to establish practices. We have our own individual practices, but we do practice now together.
No further questions.
All right, thank you very much. Board members, do you have any questions? I do not hear any questions.
Not at this time.
All right.
Madam Chair, this is Dr. Meyer.
This is who?
Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Meyer, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Mellon. Just one question. My understanding is that your relationship with Dr. Sade is professional only. You don't provide any supervision or training. Is that correct? Oh.
I do not provide supervision or training, no.
Okay, and I also asked this of Dr. Sade. It seems like there were a lot of blurring of boundaries with your team consulting on cases versus then becoming a particular person's therapist. And I couldn't find any explanation of this as a part of consent. Could you explain a little bit about where boundaries start and end and your perspective on the dual relationships that I'm seeing in this case from the professionals?
I'm not seeing the same dual relationships perhaps, but...
Okay, so first of all, Lauren Day first consulted on this case about the Dr. Sade's therapy with the client. Then Lauren Day became the therapist for the mother.
Yes.
Is there any concern? Do you have any concern about that? Those dual relationships?
Doctor, with due respect, that really has nothing to do with a complaint, and it has been addressed at some length. So I'm not sure why you're asking it, since it isn't part of the complaint pending before the board, which we were asked to respond to.
Oh, it's in response to potential unprofessional conduct, which is what a lot of this case is about. When I asked this of Dr. Sade, they recommended I ask Dr. Mellon that, and so I'm following up on that. Answer or not, that's up to you.
Well, let me just interject. When you asked Dr. Sade, she pointed out that the parties were made aware of the prior relationship with Lauren Day, and all the parties signed waivers to what.
Yes, it's not on the client's responsibility to waive a dual relationship. Ethically, that is a professional's job to make sure that they are not engaging in potentially harmful dual relationships.
Well, again, with all due respect, Doctor, I taught legal ethics at the law school for 15 years, and it is incumbent upon the professional to explain to the client what the potential conflict might be and whether it's waivable.
Mr. Harris, he has a question. He's at Dr. Meyer's asking the question. So please go ahead, Dr. Hunt, and respond.
Okay, would you please ask that question again so I could?
Sure. Do you see any potentially harmful, do you see a potentially harmful dual relationship in a therapist on a case for a child and then becoming the mother's therapist?
In this case, I too spoke with Lauren Day specifically to get additional information about medical child abuse. That is the reason we spoke to her. She happens to be one of the individuals in the area who has expertise in this. That was the extent of the consult. Then made a referral after that. Obtaining information about medical child abuse and about Ms. Day's experience and background in working with this, I felt was particularly relevant. It was relevant for us to find someone in the area that could work with the mother and had the skills and the training to be able to do the work that was required. I really still don't know anyone else in the Phoenix area that has a specialization in medical child abuse that is trained as extensively as Ms. Day. So getting information from her about her training and about how she treats this, I think was extremely relevant. I couldn't get that. And then if there was someone else that I easily then could refer to, we might have considered that. She was the only individual that I knew of that had this background.
Was any information about the child's case or situation shared with, confidentially, but shared with Ms. Day during that consultation?
You know, I'm going to have to try to put my memory hat on here. Sure. But fictitious disorder, the very fact that there is a diagnosis involves some information to be imparted to whoever we're consulting with, because the child had missed school, the child had 1,500 pages of medical records. But in terms of really talking with Lauren Day about specifically the treatment that Dr. Sade was doing, no, there wasn't that discussion. But Ms. Day needed to have an understanding of the case that we had. And my concerns for mothers escalating anxieties and how those escalating anxieties were impacting on the child, so that it made it difficult for me to move forward with the reunification. But as far as detail into things that we were doing, no. No.
Thank you. That's all I have.
I do have a question for you. Who was responsible for the child's treatment plan?
Dr. Sade.
And
I'm responsible for the treatment plan as it relates specifically to the reunification. And Dr. Sade, when she's doing EMDR, she's doing trauma work, she's helping this child with some of her physical somatization issues. She was doing that. Now, back in my court, when I'm helping that child, and I'm sure Dr. Sade does too, with challenging, in a cognitive behavioral format, her misperceptions about her father's behavior, for instance, that's my job.
All right, thank you. Other questions from the board? All right, hearing none, Dr. Flowers, were you gonna? You're on mute, Dr. Flowers.
This is one of those rare times I don't have a question at this time.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, any other Any other questions or anyone else have any comments? All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We do really appreciate it.
Thank
you. I want to go back now just quickly to Dr. Sade. The complainant still has an opportunity. After I asked Dr. Sade to clarify her education credits, then I'd like to go back to the board and see what your preference is. It's now 12:30. If you want to take a break or lunch, if you want to, you know, so think about what it is you'd like to do at this point. Dr. Sade, could you just quickly just let us know what courses you took in the credits?
Yes, they are set forth in the supplemental response on page 2. I can read it if you'd like. The APA, or medical necessity, why you legally and ethically need to know what it is, clinical documentation, what you need and what you don't, cranking out notes ethically and efficiently, different ways to write fast ethical notes. I reviewed the Joint Commission's documentation of care, treatment, and services in behavioral health care, and Adam and Breeder's Treatment Planning for Person-Centered Care, which is a book.
All right. And it's a total of how many credits?
It was 4 hours for credits and then self-study for the other two.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Board members, the next step of this process would be to talk to the complainant. I just want to get your preference first on what you'd like to do in regards to the lunch hour.
Madam Chair, could I follow up on that question real quick?
Yes, just quickly.
Dr. Sade, so your education was in school psychology, your internship was school psychology, stuck with school psychology, correct? Where does your forensic or custody court training come from? And as well as being supervised for in order to develop expertise.
Yes, I have invested considerably in post.
Can you speak a little bit closer to the mic?
Yeah, you're not. The mic's not catching you.
I have invested significantly in additional trainings after earning my license. So I'm a member of Arizona Association of Family Courts, Family and Conciliation Court, and I attend their trainings. I actually did a training for them this year. My clinical work has been all training. I've spent maybe $15,000 attending specialization trainings for EMDR and trauma work, and I've had supervision in those areas. I now have I just have to get a document notarized, and then I will be EMDR certified, which is a higher level. I can list them all if you want.
Well, I mean, EMDR is a treatment for trauma.
Correct.
It's not training in forensic work or custody. So where's the training for custody and court
informed
forensic work?
Through the AZAFCC, Arizona.
Did you receive any supervision as you first started practicing in forensic court?
I received mentorship, and I took cases that, and I haven't done any custody evaluations. I'm court informed, and so there's specific ethical guidelines for that role. And I review them regularly, and I participate in the trainings that are available several times a year through that organization. If I have questions, I have colleagues who contact, we call each other. It's a network of people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Dr. Sade?
I had a question regarding the same thing, Dr. Sade. How long, when did you first start doing this work?
I got my license in August or the fall of 2017. I think I started doing this work in the spring of 2018.
And when did you go through the training? How much training did you do before you did your first case?
I'd have to go back and look at my records. And I'm a little confused because I followed the the ethical standards for court-informed treatment here.
No, we're just asking about training and supervision.
Okay. I actually, my problem is I'm kind of a training junkie. I think that that is part of my learning personality, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board members? All right, thank you, Dr. Sade. It's now about 12:35. Would you like to take a break for lunch, like a 30-minute break? What is the preference?
Before you adjourn, whether before or after a break, I have about 2 minutes of closing remarks tonight.
All right, well, that will come. We still have, that's fine. We still have the complainant to be able to express their concerns and our questions of them. So, board members?
I think we need to take a break, and we could start with closing remarks because that will then bring us back to where we need to be, and then we can move into deliberations.
Well, we still have the complainant to have an opportunity to express their concerns.
Okay, then we need to go ahead and take a break.
All right, so let's, how about if we just take a 30-minute break? We'll be back here at 1:05, and same Zoom link, is that correct? We just hook right back up. So if you wanna just go on mute and turn off your camera, that's fine, and you can just hang out, and we'll see you back at 5 minutes after one.
Thank you.
Able to get something to eat. We are now going to move to the complainant. Is the complainant MP on the line? MP, are you on the line? You'd probably need to take yourself off mute. That happens to me all the time.
She did indicate she was going to join, but I don't know if she's been on the...
All right.